America. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Thursday, December 21st, and here are some of the stories we are covering. They are counting votes in the Democratic Republic of Congo following Wednesday's elections.
This election faced a lot of logistical difficulties, and all of this is the result of a bad preparation of the Electoral Commission.
A healthcare crisis looms for the unborn and the newborn in Sudan as the conflict escalates. African activists praise the Pope's approval of same-sex marriage, but Malawi Catholic bishops refuse to bless same-sex marriage. Liberia's president-elect Joseph Boakai says his administration will fight corruption irrespective of who is involved.
We came as a rescue mission, and I want to say that we start by making sure those people that we bring to cabinet are people of integrity.
And against the odds, a Burkina Faso journalist gives voice and hope to survivors. Those stories and more are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Vote counting has begun in the Democratic Republic of Congo following Wednesday's December 20 presidential and parliamentary elections. According to the French news agency, the AFP, election authorities announced Wednesday night that voting will continue today, Thursday, in areas where voters could not cast ballots. Reporter Al Katanti Sibati Jaffa is in the eastern DRC capital city of Goma and tells me that Wednesday's vote was marred by delays in some parts of the country.
Locals of DRC presented themselves in their voting bureau in order to vote, and some of them voted, but we must know that many of them didn't vote too, because some territories of DRC, such as Ruchuru and Masisi, are not concerned by this vote. But even where people were supposed to vote, some bureau didn't open, and others opened very, 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 very late. That pushed voters to do not stay at the voting bureau, as things started late, and I left one of the voting bureau very late at 10 p.m., and it was between voting and accounting voices.
There are some reports of delays in voting and logistics. What was your experience?
This election faced a lot of logistical difficulties, energy, and sometimes the voting machine was producing some problems and had to stop. So we can't say that many people, even the half of Congolese population, had voted, because I visited more than five voting centers, and everywhere people were saying, "We are not voting." And all of this, as I said before, is the result of a bad preparation of the Electoral Commission.
What are the opposition candidates saying, Jaffa, about the voting process?
I already heard from Dr. Mukwege, the Nobel Prize, and Martin Fayulu, who are accusing Tshisekedi and the Electoral Commission to joke with Congolese people by organizing this kind of election. Because for now, some areas, people were not able to vote because they didn't get electoral kits. They have to vote for tomorrow. So the election is not taking one day, but may take two or more days, because in some areas, locals attacked equipment and destroyed everything. There was not election in that zone, and they need a new deployment to get election. And we can't know when that deployment will take place, tomorrow, the day after tomorrow, or after a week. So we are facing a kind of election where no one knows what is what. And the candidates from the opposition are accusing the government of the DRC to do this in order to control how people vote so that they can smuggle some voices.
CENI has begun counting the ballots. How long do you think it will take before we can get preliminary results?
According to the calendar of CENI, the results of election must be announced no later than 10 of the month of January. But the problem is still the same. CENI organized this election in all the country, but some areas didn't vote, and CENI had to organize their voting moment. We don't know when, tomorrow, or how much days after, and we still don't know if that won't impact negatively the calendar, so that on 10, people may wait for the result or not.
That was reporter Jafar Akatanti speaking with us from the city of Goma in Eastern Democratic Republic of Congo. Liberia's president-elect Joseph Boakai says his administration will fight corruption irrespective of who is involved. He says transparency will begin with him and his cabinet declaring their assets. In this exclusive interview with viewers Peter Clotte, president-elect Boakai says every official in his government should be ready to serve the public, or they should go somewhere else.
I believe in fighting corruption, you always have to start with yourself. You have to be the example. And corruption is not only among government officials, but it has become a culture. We came as a rescue mission, and we know one of the biggest problems there is corruption. And I want to say that we start by making sure those people that we bring to cabinet are people of integrity. And secondly, I want to make sure that even beginning with myself, we'll declare our assets. And want to make sure that this is well known, the purpose of coming to government, to know that it's public service. And if you are not ready to serve the public, you can go elsewhere, but we want to make sure that we start on a clear note that the people of our country stood on line, they protected the votes, not to bring a team again that will do the same thing that the other people are doing or worse. So it's a clear message, declare your asset, make sure that we are prepared to audit the outgoing government so that they tell us, tell the Liberian people of their stewardship, and to make sure that we start on a footing where people know that they come to serve the public and not themselves. If they don't understand that, they actually fall where it may.
Mr. President-elect, you talked about asset declaration starting from yourself and the people who work with you, as well as the outgoing administration. How do you plan to avoid the semblance of targeting people? Because some people will say these are politically motivated to tarnish their reputation or to go against them, people from certain tribes or specific parts of the country. How do you plan to avoid this?
We are aware of that. And when we talk about auditing, it's not going to be a Liberian auditing. We want to make sure that our international partners work with us for public tender for competent and renowned auditing firm that will be qualified at an international level to make sure they come on board to do that. We are aware of people saying wish hunting, but I don't think it's wish hunting when you have to account for your stewardship, but it has to be done in a way that is well-established, entity with reputation, to make sure that it audits and make sure that it reports to the public the findings.
Well, sometimes people say that politicians make lofty promises when they are campaigning, but when it gets to governance, it becomes different. What would be different? Assuming allies of yours, family members of yours, or people who are close to you, family members, are accused of corruption during your administration, Mr. President-elect, how do you plan to tackle this specifically?
I'm not coming new to government.
Right.
Although in different positions, I ran a public corporation that was credible. And I can tell you that I come to work not with friendship. I have friends, but there is a clear line of demarcation between friendship, family, and managing. With the experience that we come with a country that celebrates 176 years and with the life of our people living below the poverty line, I don't think we come into government again to start thinking about our family. I think we come there to make sure that we give the Liberian people hope, and I'm committed to that.
Liberia's President-elect Joseph Boakai was speaking with viewers Peter Clotty here in our Washington studio. According to the British charity Save the Children, some 30,000 children will be born in war-torn Sudan over the next 3 months without access to proper medical care. The group says the lack of basic health care endangers both mothers and unborn children and heightens the risk of long-term and deadly complications. Mohammed Yusuf reports from Nairobi.
At least 45,000 children are expected to be born in Sudan in the next 3 months. Around two-thirds of them will be born without proper medical care amid months of conflict that has destroyed many health facilities in the country. The head of children protection at Save the Children International in Sudan, Osman Adam Abdul Karim, told VOA that the recent escalation of violence in many parts of Sudan has made his organization fear for pregnant women and millions of others. In the town of Wad Madani in Al Jazeera State, he says the medical system has collapsed.
There is no health facilities going to be operational. There is two doctors killed in the last 3 days. And all of the medical staff, they evacuated and they left the place. And also the supply chain to reach out the areas.
The recent escalation of conflict has seen more than 25,000 pregnant women on the move from violence, and Save the Children warns the women likely will be cut off from the health facilities and right nutrition needed to support their babies. Health experts say the first 4 weeks of a child's life carry the highest risk of death and are the most dangerous for the mother. Most of the deaths are caused by birth asphyxia, premature birth or infections. Hala Al-Karib is the regional director of the Strategic Initiative for Women in the Horn of Africa. She says there are not enough facilities in Sudan right now to help women and children.
We are going to see a large number of women losing their lives. We are going to see a lot of children losing their lives because of the fact that, you know, the infrastructure that's typically established in a wartime, you know, has not been done. And that's in itself is an issue. The other issue, which is the total failures of the mediation efforts that's controlled by the Americans, it's controlled by the Saudis, who are both of them, they have not been successful to create safe zones for civilians.
Sudan descended into armed conflict in April after the leader of the Sudanese armed forces, General Abdel Fattah al-Burhan, and the leader of Sudan's paramilitary rapid support forces, Mohamed Hamdan Dagalo, disagreed on how to move the country from military rule to a civilian-led government. More than 12,000 people have been killed since April, according to the Armed Conflict Location and Event Data Project. The conflict has displaced more than 4.3 million people and 1.1 million have fled to neighboring countries. Al-Karib says Sudanese civilians need safe camps.
All the medical service and medical facilities were totally collapsed at this point in time. Now, since the war was erupted in April, you know, there have been frequent calls to the international community to establish IDB camps, safe IDB camps for civilians to exist with services and so on. That never happened.
The war has made it difficult for aid agencies to reach millions of people in need of food, water and medicine due to the warring parties' failure to allow humanitarian workers to safely pass through dangerous areas. Mohammed Yusuf, VOA News, Nairobi.
You are listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Thursday, December 21st. For more Africa news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. African activists are praising the Pope's decision to let Catholic priests bless same-sex couples with hopes that the Pope's gesture would ease anti-LGBTQ sentiment and oppression on the continent, but African religious organizations are not expected to embrace the Vatican's announcement. Timothy Obiezu reports on reaction in Nigeria, where at least one bishop has voiced dismay with the Pope's decision.
Nigerian activist Promise Ohiri, known as Empress Cookie, woke up to cheering news on Tuesday. Pope Francis had okayed Catholic priests to give blessings to same-sex couples in a landmark declaration. Ohiri, a Catholic transgender woman, has faced serious discrimination and threats. She says she couldn't have hoped for better news, but acknowledges there will be resistance.
It's not going to be an easy thing. I'm very sure that the African people will definitely protest against it. They mostly use religion against, you know, the queer people. I feel like Pope making the decision of himself is what I feel like is for good, you know, for the queer people, and is good, honestly. I'm having a good reaction over it.
The Vatican said the blessing will not be similar to a wedding consecration, which it maintained can happen only between a man and a woman. The Vatican stated that homosexuality is, quote, intrinsically disordered, end quote, but argued that same-sex couples must be treated with dignity and respect. But the announcement has sparked debates in Africa, where homosexuality is widely viewed as a sin, an abomination, or a Western import. In Nigeria, same-sex relations are punishable by a 14-year jail term. Ohiri is hopeful the Pope's declaration will change things.
Pope doing this is like more of, you know, shocking the whole world, breaking some, you know, foundations. When I mean foundation, I mean the law that are so much against these queer people. If the religion are in support of these queer people, trust me, it's going to shake a lot of people. It's going to shake the Nigeria, you know, SSMPA law. It's going to shake other countries that have not signed it into law. It's really normal for them to protest.
But Bishop John Praise Daniel, Vice President of the Pentecostal Fellowship of Nigeria, says same-sex blessings or marriage are not acceptable.
I am more or less like shocked when I heard what the Pope said. There is nobody who can change the position of the Word of God. Whether you are a Pope, you are an Archbishop, you are a Cardinal, or whatever the designation may be, the Word of God is written. So if the Word of God does not support it, I don't care who supports it, it's invalid.
But experts predict that Nigeria's Catholic Church officials may disagree and continue with a different doctrine on the matter. Mike Umo, spokesperson of the Catholic Society of Nigeria, spoke to VOA by phone.
I can tell you that the Catholic bishops of Nigeria are presently working on their position that will very, very soon be made public.
This week, a Ugandan court commenced hearing a suit challenging the East African country's harsh anti-LGBTQ law, which punishes, quote, aggravated homosexuality, end quote, with a life sentence. Activists like Ohiri say they're skeptical that Nigeria's laws against homosexuality will be overturned, but they say Pope's declaration is a step in the right direction. Timothy Obiezu, VOA News, Abuja, Nigeria.
Catholic bishops in Malawi say they will not offer blessings for same-sex unions in their churches. The bishops contradict a doctrinal declaration that the Vatican released on Sunday, in which Pope Francis said that LGBTQ couples could be blessed, but without any type of ritualization or offering the impression of a marriage. Lamek Masina reports from Blantyre.
An umbrella body of the Catholic bishops in Malawi, the Episcopal Conference of Malawi, says in a statement that the decision comes after noting certain erroneous interpretations of the Pope's declaration. They say this has generated interest, fear, and worry among Catholics in Malawi and those who look up to the Church for moral, spiritual, and doctrinal guidance. The bishops say the Pope's declaration is not about embracing same-sex unions and endorsement of them, as many people in Malawi have interpreted. They, however, say that the blessings of any kind and for same-sex unions are not permitted in Malawi to avoid creating confusion among the faithful. However, rights campaigners in Malawi are expressing concern over the stand bishops in Malawi have taken on the matter. Osman Kennedy is the human rights lawyer in Malawi.
I'm surprised, because my understanding was that when the Pope prescribes something, that prescription ought to be followed. However, what I've seen is that in Malawi, the bishops, particularly the Episcopal Conference of Malawi, has rebuffed Pope. That to me is strange.
Kennedy says even more disturbing is that the bishops are taking a stand that infringes on other people's rights.
Problem is that within the Catholic, there are people who are homosexuals. And those people, we are supposed to be shown love. And now when the church is discarding those people, promoting discrimination, then you find that there'll be so many violations of human rights that will come along the way. Those people will be denied their right to religion. They cannot go to the church. They cannot associate with others.
Religious leaders in Malawi and in other African countries and elsewhere have long condemned same-sex unions. In July, a group of religious leaders in Malawi held a nationwide street protest against such marriages. The religious leaders, led by Catholic bishops, petitioned the parliament in the capital Lilongwe and said same-sex marriages are a sin and allowing such unions would lead to extinction of the human race. Activists say that's not likely because historically most people are heterosexual and only have an attraction to the opposite sex. For VOA English to Africa, I am Lamek Masina in Blantyre, Malawi.
Rocked by conflict and unrest, Burkina Faso is a tough environment for journalists, with issues like rape and sexual violence often taboo. But Mariam Ouedraogo is pushing back to provide a platform through her reporting for those affected by unrest. While in Washington to receive an award, she spoke with viewers Salem Solomon about her career.
Based in the bustling capital of Burkina Faso, Mariam Ouedraogo is focused on her reporting for the French daily Citoyen. The Burkinabe journalist has built a career out of shedding light on oft-overlooked social issues that affect her community. In her coverage of education, health, and insecurity, she looks to how women, children, and people with disabilities are affected. Her drive, a desire to make a difference through journalism.
It's because I wanted to change things. I had this desire not to change the social order, but I was looking for a job that would allow me to have more impact, especially on social facts and the subjects surrounding us.
It's an approach that has earned the reporter national and international recognition, including a Knight Award presented in Washington in the fall. Each award, says Ouedraogo, is an opportunity to amplify the voices of those she reports on, including survivors of conflict and rape.
Mariam Ouedraogo.
Ouedraogo also broke new ground when honored with the Bayou Calvados Normandy Award for war correspondents, the first African woman to win that award. Militant attacks in Ouedraogo's home country are increasing. The Africa Center for Strategic Studies, a research center focused on security, estimates that around 8,600 people will die due to extremist attacks by the end of this year, more than double the total last year. Instability in Burkina Faso drives a lot of Ouedraogo's reporting. She says the stories collected from survivors of rape, which extremists often use as a weapon, weigh heavy.
It's unimaginable what suffering they endured. The simple fact that she is sexually assaulted, and often by several people, and in front of everyone, sometimes under the gaze of children. It's traumatic, and it's another death. I call it another death.
Ouedraogo opened up about her struggles with what is commonly known as vicarious trauma. Salem Solomon, VOA News.
And that's it for this Thursday, December 21st edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for being our guest this morning. For more African news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We are also on YouTube, where you can watch our TV shows, Africa 54, Straight Talk Africa, and Red Carpet. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, I am James Botting, Washington, saying, have a great day, and please be safe, whatever you do.